I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome back to another episode of the Wild Ones podcast, the show where we chat about bike stuff. I'm Jimmy, and this week I'm joined by producer Emily and one of the most controversial figures in cycling. To some, he's a hero, protecting our roads from dangerous drivers. To others, he's a menace to society. You've probably seen those viral clips of him confronting drivers who are using phones and driving the wrong way down the street. I'm, of course, talking about camera-wielding vigilante and road safety campaigner, cycling Mikey. Hey, Mikey.
Hi, everyone.
Thanks for coming down. How you doing?
Oh, I'm very honored to be here with you guys. You guys are legends. I've been watching you and Francis for a long time.
Thank you. Well, I think if anyone has had a more significant impact on people's lives, I'm going to say it's you over us. So thank you for what you do.
Oh, thank you. I don't know if it's true. Collectively, maybe, with everybody reporting. On my own, maybe not very much.
Most people listening are probably familiar with your work, but for those who aren't, can you sum up what you do?
Yeah, so I got tired of getting close past on my commute and having bad driving around me and not being able to do anything about it. So I started wearing cameras back in about 2006. And now on my commutes, on my trips, I report bad driving, most of which is people on their phones nowadays. But it's close passes too, red lights, and of course Gandalf Corner going on the wrong side of the road. So I don't do this during very much of my day. It's only a few minutes out on my normal trip to work or one day I went to the dentist and I caught six people.
So I think you have some statistics which you've been recording since 2019, and you have reported 1,700 drivers, which has resulted in over 2,300 penalty points and fines in excess of £143,000.
Yeah, it sounds like quite a lot, but that is 5.5 years of less than one person a day on average. So it's not as much work as it seems. And also the points are probably only half what have actually been put out because it's very hard to get results from the Met nowadays.
Yeah. So as in actually them confirming to you whether it's been someone's been given points or not.
Exactly. Oh, and I've got to give a shout out to Cycle Gaz, who's my camera mate from a long time back. He's the one who started me getting into using a spreadsheet. And I'm really glad he did because I would have been drowning in trying to manage all that.
Is it a lot of admin?
Yeah, it's just really a grind. So every day you catch someone, so you have to, the clipping of the video and the reporting is quite quick and easy. But then you still have to make a note of where and when it was and what happened so that if the police get back to you on that one, you can then know exactly where to find the video for court and the statement and all that kind of thing. It's just a grind. And I play video games with my kids quite a lot. And I always end up being the one who does the grind in the game to earn all the XP because apparently I'm good at that.
So you record footage and upload it to your YouTube channel. So if you're listening and you haven't seen him, pause this, go to YouTube and type in Cycling Mikey and you will see some stuff that will either enrage you or you will hate his guts, because that seems to be the only options.
It'll enrage you, but maybe for different reasons.
There's also some famous people in there as well that you've caught, which is definitely some of your clips that have gone viral in the past.
Yeah, I'm sad to say I didn't actually recognize any of them. I didn't recognize Guy Ritchie, but I probably wouldn't. I didn't recognize Frank Lampard. The one I'm a little bit ashamed of not recognizing is Chris Eubank. I should have recognized him. And I think he's a really cool, somewhat eccentric character with amazing dress sense.
Yeah. and now he is one of your victims.
Yeah, people often say they're victims, right? I'm going to defend the victim and the vigilante thing. So these drivers are committing traffic offenses. They're not victims. They've just been caught doing something that they mostly know better. Mm-hmm. So they're not a victim. They're just, you know, they're just ordinary human beings like you and I, but doing something that's adding risk to our roads. Mm. And on the vigilante side of things, yeah, I don't think I'm a vigilante because I take that evidence. I give it to the police.
Yep.
And I let the justice system deal with it. I've still mostly got faith in the justice system with its imperfections.
Yeah.
I'm not taking the phone out of their hands and smashing it down the road or something.
I think what you're doing is holding a mirror up to someone and showing them what they are doing. And I think it's really interesting to see the reactions that people have to that. As someone who was recently caught for speeding, we talked about on that podcast a couple of weeks ago, I went on a speed awareness course and actually it's really improved my driving for the better. But that is how I respond to authority. I'm terrified of authority. And also I don't mind admitting when I'm wrong. However, it's really, really interesting. See, sometimes people say that you're confrontational, but actually you don't mind speaking back, but you don't usually start it. But it's interesting to see what holding that mirror up to someone who is being caught doing something that they shouldn't have been. It's interesting to see what the reaction is to that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of putting it. It's holding up a mirror, and we don't always like seeing ourselves in the mirror or hearing ourselves on audio.
Yeah, you get used to it, Mikey.
So I think that's exactly right. And talking about the speed awareness courses, I was originally very skeptical of them. But over time, I've been convinced that actually they're a really good thing. As you know, I caught myself going through a red light in Victoria the other week.
Yes.
But that's the beauty of cameras, is it's not just about teaching other drivers. You can go back and learn what you yourself could have done differently to change the situation.
Yeah.
In this case, someone had turned a light and I'd focused on that light and didn't see the other three lights as red. And it's partly because human vision is only really, really good in a very small area directly where you're looking at, and then your brain imagines the rest of it. I'm not making an excuse here. It's still my fault because I should have scanned all the lights.
Turned a light as in one of the lights was incorrectly facing towards you, showing it as green.
I think a drunkard turned it.
Oh, right.
But I should have seen all the other three lights that were red.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I put it up and I said, look, if you want to, you can report me.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with it. You know, if they want to give me a ticket, that's absolutely fine. I broke the law. I'm no better than anyone else.
So you get a lot of hate, both in person and online. You've been hit by cars, threatened, pushed, called every name under the sun. More concerningly, you were once voted more unpopular than Adolf Hitler in a Twitter poll of almost 13,000 people. It was talked about in the news at the time. What did you think when you heard that?
Yeah, initially I was quite shocked. And then I thought, you know what? Actually, I'm going to take Mark Hodson, the recently retired traffic officer who started Operation Close Pass.
Yeah.
Who I think we're all very grateful to, because he's really making his operation is spread around the country. And anyway, his view of this is there's no traction without reaction. So it shows that those almost 7,000 people who voted are really quite concerned about third-party reporting. So they hate it because they feel vulnerable to it.
Because they might get caught doing something that they're used to doing, yeah.
And it's obviously the sense that cyclists are supposedly cockroaches of the road.
Yeah.
And shouldn't be telling drivers what to do.
I think that's the concerning part because, you know, reading this on a surface headline, that seems like a funny thing. But actually, when you dig into it, there's something like there's an undertone of sinisterness there, isn't there? That comparison, I mean, shouldn't even happen. It's ridiculous. But that there's people in the world who have access to really dangerous, massive vehicles that are driving next to vulnerable road users that think that they are scum of the earth kind of vibes is, I would say, terrifying as a cyclist.
It is scary, right? I try not to think about it because maybe I'd stop cycling then.
Yeah, perhaps, yeah.
So there's a really, really good cartoon. I think it's, is it Disney? Called Mr. Walker and Mr. Wheeler.
Right.
It's from like 75 years ago, somewhere in the 50s. And it's Mr. Walker, who's this very polite gentleman. And then he gets in his car and he turns into the devil incarnate. And that's not true of every driver, of course. But there's elements of that which resound really well in today's driving world and driving culture.
Interesting.
So why do you think that what you do bothers people so much?
Yeah, I think it's partly that cyclists are supposedly the most law-breaking road user, which a couple of studies tell us is not true. We're actually less law-breaking than drivers on average.
Yeah.
I think it's partly that cyclists are seen as the lowest status road user, far below even pedestrians and horse riders. And drivers don't really like getting tickets or being held accountable in any way.
Mm. I do definitely agree with that.
Some will kick off when they are held accountable.
Do taxi drivers have a particular vendetta against you? Do professional drivers?
So what I've noticed, so let's start off with London buses. They're not perfect, but on average, I'm very happy to coexist with most London bus drivers.
Yeah.
I feel like TfL has done a very good thing about the standard of bus driving. So black cab drivers, I'm in two minds, and the torrent of abuse on Twitter from some black cab drivers is appalling. It's really, really, really bad. But then I also know quite a lot of really good professional black cab drivers who are nothing like that.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much of it is just my anecdote.
Mm.
What I will say is I think that they're probably not massively different to the rest of the general driver group, possibly with a little bit more entitlement. And that's purely because we are London's finest, we've passed the knowledge, and we're professional drivers. So I think that is probably only a small effect.
Ultimately, what you're saying is that the proportion of bad drivers is across all drivers.
Yeah, I don't hate cab drivers. And I think more and more of them realize that now, that I'm not targeting cab drivers, I'm not targeting Ubers. Some people say I let cab drivers off and that I target Uber drivers, but it's not true. I target usually the phone holding or the red light jumping.
Yeah.
I don't care who's doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's a really important message as well, because you exist not through your own design, but you exist a lot in right-wing press. Your stories get picked up and it really ends up being this kind of like hate-filled driver versus cyclist hyperbolic thing.
Yes.
When actually it's a lot more nuanced. There's good and bad people everywhere, and just because someone does a bad thing doesn't make them a bad person. No. It's nuanced, isn't it? I think
there's bad cyclists and bad pedestrians, even though that's kind of hard to be a bad pedestrian, you know?
Yeah.
So, for example, I sometimes will make a donkey bray at a cyclist jumping a red light, because it's not very dangerous, as we know from the stats, but it's a little bit irritating.
Mm.
And I confess, when I first started riding in London, I did jump red lights for a little bit. And then I realized it was wrong and I stopped.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm not perfect either. You should have seen my driving in Zimbabwe. It got better when I came to the UK. So I'm grateful to the UK for learning much more about it. It's not that I was bad in Zimbabwe. I wasn't even particularly law-breaking. But it's only since coming here that I've held myself to a higher standard.
So I was really surprised to find out this week that it's not just motorists that disagree with camera cyclists reporting dangerous driving. So in last week's podcast, we talked about me reporting a car passing me at 72 miles an hour, according to my Garmin Varia, in a 30. And many of the comments were supportive. So John said, keep sending in the video footage. My mate had 8 successful convictions in 2 weekends through Northumbria Police. Brian said, I would endorse that what others have said about reporting drivers. I used to work for the biggest Northeast police force, and I know that a lot of drivers are prosecuted for close passes and other road-related offences based on submitted camera footage. It's definitely not a waste of time. However, there were some people against what I did. One said, nobody likes a snitch. If it's a close pass or something that puts you in danger, then it's totally justified. But if someone goes a bit faster than you would like and you report them to police, it's just snitching. If you want to be an officer, go and apply to the force. Otherwise, mind your own business.
I think it's interesting. Number one, a bit faster than you're like 72 and a 30. And it's interesting the idea that not the comparison between close passing is something that puts you in direct danger, but speeding of any type doesn't put you in danger in this people's minds.
I'm quite against speeding now because of DCS Andy Cox, who's a senior police officer in the Met, and he changed how the causes of fatal collisions are measured. They were I don't know the exact details, but they were measured near the beginning of the investigation and recorded.
Yeah.
And he's done that now at the end of the investigation. And the result was that something like 50% of fatals are because of speeding as the sole cause. So I'd say 72 in a 30 is, yeah, that's pretty bad.
I want all 30s to become 20s and I want 60s to become 40s. And it'll never happen.
No.
But I would, well, that's what I would like to happen.
I think there's a lot of cases where we want to drop the speed limit. Was it, who was it? It was Ben Fogel recently talking about there being rural 60-mile-an-hour limits through rural villages, which is crazy.
It is, yeah.
That sort of thing definitely should be reviewed.
Yeah.
And I'm also looking forward to new cars getting GPS speed limiters. So although some people will turn them off, and you can apparently turn them off, enough people won't turn them off that they will become the rolling speed humps of the road.
Yeah. I've started using my speed limiter in my car. So I got an EV and I've just not getting that response in the same way. My speed started to creep up and I've started to use the speed limiter. And it's actually great because, not that I want to say you don't have to think about it, because you should still be actively thinking about it. And I'm thinking about, but I'm watching out for speed signs to then program it. But you know that you're not going to creep up. And it's actually, it's definitely an aid to driving.
I'm sure it feels more relaxing.
100%, yeah.
I bet you get a queue of angry drivers behind you or impatient ones who want to pass.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah, yeah.
It's, I remember getting that.
Yeah, but I don't really care. I always think I'm actually probably saving you for a speeding ticket, because potentially if there's something up the road, you're going to get caught.
So I've got another comment here from Stephen. It says, it's not long ago that Jimmy was asking everyone to be nice. Now he's reporting car drivers. He's too stupid to understand this result will result in a reaction on the rest of us. The driver will now target all cyclists, probably with serious results.
I would completely dismiss that out of hand. Firstly, you are being nice. You're being nice to society.
Maybe
it's tough on the individual driver, but we all make mistakes that we have to get told off for in life, not just driving. And secondly, I doubt that most drivers will get angry. They will, in fact, instead become afraid of being caught again.
Yes.
Because they don't know who caught them very often. And they're starting to realize that there are tens of thousands of people with cameras out there reporting traffic offenses, as it should be.
Absolutely. Yeah, it can be a powerful motivator, can't it?
I'm sure that there's a couple of people who might get more angry, but I think the net result will be massively in favor of people being more nervous of being caught.
I agree.
Criminology 101 says the thing that changes behavior is the perception of how likely you are to be caught. So I'm almost, and if there was more catching of say phone drivers, I wouldn't mind if the penalty came down a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a serious traffic offense, but it's the fact that we need to get them caught.
Yeah.
That will change the behavior.
So I commute in and out of town with Nick, pro bike mechanic Nick, quite a bit. And he was actually asking me yesterday if I've heard anything back on the close passes that I've submitted recently. And then I admitted that I haven't actually got around to submitting them yet. And I was just like, what? Like, why are you so interested in it? He was like, well, I want, if we are both submitting close pass reports as much as possible on the same route, the same roads we use all the time to commute, he is of the opinion that it will clean up our commute and make our commute safer. And I hadn't really thought about it like that, but like, surely that is the case. If we keep reporting people that are always using the same roads, then there will come a point where they have to stop close passing, because otherwise they will end up losing their license or getting points or having to pay more on their insurance because they've got a criminal offence. Have you found anything along those lines?
I think Nick is spot on. I on my commute along from Biggin Hill to Bromley, all the way through Bromley and into central London, but on that section between Bromley and Biggin Hill, in the first 6 months when I started commuting that, I really noticed how horrible it started off and how much it changed. And back then, they weren't even prosecuting. That was just RoadSafe who would write letters to the drivers with words of advice.
Yeah. Because even that is like, that surely does make a difference. That's the first step of just kind of being like, oh, wait there, I probably should pay more attention.
Yeah. And also someone's watching.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a bit more about the antics of Mikey later on. But now we're going to dive into some news. So first up, Shimano's faulty crank inspection program is being scrutinized after a cyclist's Ultegra crank snapped months after it passed an examination. So a bike shop called Surrey Hills Cycle Works put pictures on Instagram following a customer's broken crank. They said the bike was checked 5 months ago, but then on the shop ride at the weekend, it came apart. You might remember around 2.8 million Holotech cranks were potentially affected by this issue. But rather than a blanket recall, Shimano set up this inspection program where customers owning cranks with certain serial numbers were told to get them inspected by authorized Shimano dealers. This is the first case we've heard where a crank has passed an inspection but subsequently broken, and it does raise a question about the effectiveness of the system. The owner at Surrey Hills Cycle Works, Dave Farmer, spoke to Cycling Weekly. He told the magazine that this particular crank was inspected in the first week Shimano set up the program and showed no visible signs of fracturing or debonding and made no clicking noises. However, he now says the whole program feels like a bit of a gamble. He added, "Personally, I don't like that gamble. I feel that if you have created cranks that can fail, they should all be exchanged." He also added, "It's still the responsibility of the rider to constantly inspect their crank after it has been officially inspected, which in his opinion makes a mockery of having a professional inspect the crank in the first place."
Yes, so it begs the question, is a full recall needed? When this news came out, there was a few people that spoke to experts. I think Cycling Weekly spoke to a legal expert, which said that it was a very unusual approach to corrective action by not just issuing a full recall and setting up the inspection program. I think there will be a lot of both customers and bike shop owners who feel like that should be happening. We also spoke to Nick. I spoke to him yesterday and got some comments from him. Here's what he had to say.
I've heard loads of stuff on forums on the internet where some shops aren't even checking them. They're literally just sending them all back. Every single one that comes in, box it up, send it off to Madison, get a new one. Which I think is what Shimano should have done originally, is just replace all of them, but understand that there's millions, 2.8 million affected. There's such a fine microscope on this at the moment that the first person where this was going to happen, it was going to come out. So it's not like it was due to happen. The other thing is it says in the article as well, it was over winter. It got checked before winter and they rode over winter. And as we discussed before, it is water and corrosion that's getting there, causing the issues.
This bike shop, off the back of this, is now saying to people that they need to get their cranks inspected, but they then need to keep a regular eye on them. And, you know, it's not the bike shop's fault, but what else do you do? Do you think that's the right advice, that it should be on the consumer to continue to check your cranks?
Well, yes, with everything in a bike, I mean, we try and tell from shops people need to check their bikes. They need to see their chains are okay, because just because you've had a bike serviced or something done, and then you can't just expect to leave it over winter and it's just continuously running fine. It's same as listening for creaks. I would be suspecting that bike would have been creaking quite a bit before that snapped. It wouldn't have just been a thing of works perfectly, snapped. It's there would have been loads of, in my opinion, loads of warning markers that something's wrong, yeah? Either bottom bracket needs servicing or the pedals are going. Yeah, people shouldn't anyway just check the bikes over all the time. Do an M check regularly.
But should it be up to consumers to do that if actually the problem is that the cranks are faulty?
In an ideal situation, Shimano should just replace all the cranks. That's what should happen. But it's probably a good message to get out to people. Keep checking your bike. Anyway, not just because, even if you don't have Shimano cranks, doesn't matter. If you're going to ride a bike, it's the same as technically before you drive a car, every single time you're supposed to do a walk around. We get taught this in our driving license test, but I don't think I've ever seen anybody do it.
Also, if you watched that and you noticed there was an odd emoji in the corner, that's because Nick was with his daughter that day and we have kept her face private. So that's what it looks like. Yeah. What do you think about what Nick said? It's an odd thing to put an onus on a customer to watch their bike. Yes, you should be checking your bikes regularly, but if you're potentially sitting on a part that could fail.
It's hard to say because I don't know enough about why they are failing. My first thoughts are they should be replacing everything.
I think that's a lot of people's thoughts, yeah.
Especially because they're a massive business. They can afford to do it. You know, like it isn't going to bankrupt them if they replace all of them. Perhaps they're relatively confident that a lot of them don't actually exist anymore. Maybe there's actually not that many of them.
Perhaps. They were sold between 2012 and 2019, I think.
Yeah.
I would imagine there's a lot still in the secondhand market.
I'd be interested in the failure rate because that also will determine what is the right decision.
Mm.
But I'm like Nick, I'm very uncomfortable in the inspection. There are engineering dies you can use to help you find cracks. But only not the smallest ones. And if it's beyond that, then you're looking at ultrasound and x-ray, which I don't think anyone would be doing in this inspection.
Mm. No, it's very much a visual inspection and listening for a noise. But Nick said also that, you know, it wouldn't just break. You're likely to hear a creaking noise before it starts to break. And ultimately, at this point, whether rightly or wrongly, at this point, the only thing that you can do as a customer is just take your bike to it. As soon as you hear a noise or anything, take it in, don't risk it kind of thing. But I think we should keep on top of this story. So if you've had a crank that's been inspected, if you're going through the inspection process currently, or if you've had a crank that has failed, email us at wildonespodcast@cademedia.co.uk and we will keep on top of this story and see what happens. We did ask Shimano for some comment on this as well, didn't we? So we asked them, does this case raise any concerns for Shimano about the effectiveness of the inspection program? And we also asked them, the inspection program is intended to remove unsafe cranks from the market. The concern for many now is that this approach isn't robust enough to do that and that unsafe cranks may still be ridden by unsuspecting customers. How would you respond to that? And they got back to us and said, since the Shimano crankset inspection program was first announced in September last year, the process has been running well. They say reports of failed cranksets following initial inspection are rare, but for users' peace of mind, we recommend that even after initial inspection determines that a replacement is not necessary, customers are advised to have a second inspection as soon as they feel any concerns themselves, or approximately 1 year later. So they are saying that even if you don't get any concerns, you have to take that crank in for inspection every single year. For free, presumably.
Yeah, but it's never for free. You still have to get it. Like, it's all time and energy and effort.
It is, I agree. It is. They say our authorized Shimano dealers are professionals and will have received instructions from Shimano to perform inspections correctly. Having your bike tuned up and inspected regularly is something that should be done based on your riding habits and recommendations from your dealer. It's also important to pay attention to any changes in the sound and feel of how your bike is riding. They say they're proactively addressing any safety concerns related to these affected crank sets. So they have acknowledged it. I think it's important that we cover this story. I think it's important that the other cycling press cover that story and we go to them with anything that happens, because almost a bit like your reporting, Mikey, sometimes you need to feel like there's someone watching you and holding you accountable for stuff.
It's probably worth that I put out some detail on this too.
Yes, yeah, probably.
Just to spread the word.
Yeah, perhaps. And you know, if nothing comes back, then that gives you more peace of mind that this is a one-off.
It gives me the heebies.
Does it? I can imagine it would for a lot of people.
I think the bit I dislike most about it is for a large period of time, I did all of my own bike mechanics. I built my own bikes. I maintained them. I did everything myself. So what they're telling me is I have to go to a bike shop that might not be very convenient for me every 12 months. And they're inevitably going to say, oh yeah, you need us, we'll do it as part of a bike service. Well, like, well, no, I service my own bike.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know that's going to happen. I would say Nick would say you should be going to a mechanic anyway and not being doing all your own mechanics.
Well, yeah, but like what proportion of people do their own bike mechanics?
Probably a lot.
Large. Yeah, exactly. The number must be massive.
You're one of those, Mikey.
Yeah, I like working on bikes. I remember being a spanner boy for my dad fixing cars.
Nice. Next, a lighter piece of Shimano news. A new patent have just emerged hinting that the company are working on a fully wireless group set. They've so far only managed to achieve semi-wireless group sets where the shifters communicate wirelessly while the derailleur's connected to a central battery via cables. However, new patent drawings spotted on RoadCC show a derailleur with its own internal battery. The accompanying text suggests that the rear derailleur and front derailleur include an electrical power source.
Jimmy, we were talking about this yesterday and you were saying you were shocked at how inefficient some bike brands are. What does that mean?
So, at the end of the day, a bike brand is a business and they have to stock or they have to put group sets onto their bikes. And there are very few bike brands out there, so bicycle frame brands, that don't also sell complete bikes. There are some that don't sell completes, but most of them also sell complete bikes. So they are going to be paying staff to build bikes. And I don't understand why they wouldn't build everything with SRAM ETAP, because it is going to save them so many hours in labor costs versus 11-speed DI2, which has got a mountain of cables that needs to be threaded. 12-speed DI2 is now more efficient because it's only two cables rather than many more. But I don't understand why the industry hasn't put more pressure on brands like Shimano to say, well, it's not good enough. We're not going to buy your products until they're in line with other brands out there. It doesn't just apply to group sets. It applies to cable routing. Some brands' cable routing is really, really bad. So say for example, you want to route cables through the bars, your brake hoses through the frame. It is really hard to do versus other brands, which is very easy. So I don't know why there's not more pressure at the business efficiency side of things to make this better. Mm. So I'm surprised that Shimano have been able to get away as long as they have with a really inefficient group set for building bikes.
Yeah, I guess it's just always been the way it's been done, hasn't it, with cables? SRAM kind of revolutionized that with their wireless stuff, and it seems like Shimano's been playing catch up ever since, really.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, it's significantly easier to build a mechanical bike than it is to build a bike with DI2. The most easiest of everything is a bike with SRAM's ETAP, because you literally just bolt your mechs on and bosh, you're away.
I guess you also have to think about, if it's easier to build, is there an argument that bike shops will be pushing it more because it's easier for them to build? You know, as we know, Nick is a SRAMvangelist, as someone called him. And perhaps part of that, whether consciously or subconsciously, is because it's easier and less time consuming for him to build that bike. He's never going to stop selling Shimano. If a customer wants Shimano, he's going to do it. But it's in his interest potentially to sell SRAM because it's an easier product for him to build.
Well, at the very least, it would be in his interest to charge someone significantly more for building a bike with 11-speed DI2 than a SRAM build.
Yeah.
But people expect flat rates.
Yeah.
So, like, I've filmed something like 50-odd bike builds with Nick. Nearly a lot of them are SRAM. Some of them are 11-speed and 12-speed DI2 builds. Whenever I have to do a build with him that's 11-speed DI2, I have to add at least an extra 2 hours, because there will be an hour which is just routing cables through bars. Like, exclusively that. And that's the point where I go, right, I'll just put the camera down for a bit and not bother filming this because it's going to look atrocious as well.
Everybody hates cable management.
Yeah.
Whether it's bikes or anything else.
How do you feel about wireless, Mikey? Do you think it's overrated or underrated?
I love the idea. I've never had wireless because my last fast bike was a recumbent.
Yeah.
It's something I desire.
I've never ridden any wireless either, and I almost don't want to. I think ignorance is bliss, and sometimes when you higher your standards, it can create more problems in your life. You have higher standards.
You could be right.
Yeah, end up being more unhappy.
I said exactly that for years. I spent most of my time on mechanical group sets because I didn't want to move, because I knew once I moved to electric, it would be hard to go back, and it just is now. It's just, it's so good.
I knew
it's completely unnecessary.
I absolutely knew it, even though I've never ridden it.
Yeah,
I want it.
Don't bother getting it, because as soon as you do, you'll be like, right, I need to put it on everything now.
Here's a question. I see on your videos, you leave your bike on Gandalf Corner, for example, or wherever it is. It looks locked up, but potentially people know that you're there. Does your bike become a target? And are you conscious of how much you're spending on parts and stuff because it's potentially a target?
No, not so much. When I left the bike parked on the pavement, that was done intentionally to stop drivers going on the pavement.
Oh, interesting. So they're actually going on the pavement round that corner where they can't
that.
See.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I don't want the pedestrians to be at risk.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's if it's my gazelle, then it's got a nurse's lock. Right. I don't know what the English word for that is.
Cafe lock, maybe?
Maybe it's the one that's always on the back wheel. When you pull the key out, it's automatically locked.
Yeah,
it's very
yeah.
Dutch.
Yeah. So it's like built into the frame almost.
I'll tell you another thing I learned from this Dutch bike, because I haven't had Woods valves. You know, the Dutch style of valve?
No.
They're not very common here. So they look like a mix between a Presto and a Schrader.
Yeah.
But they don't leak air. I only pump my Gazelle up maybe every 6 to 10 months. Can you believe that, right?
Why doesn't everyone have these then?
Yeah. I guess they're not so good for race bikes.
So now it's back over to Mikey, and we are going to ask our big question of the week. What is it really like being the most hated cyclist in Britain? And I guess firstly, how did this all start?
Yeah, so, you know, like every cyclist, if you're going out regularly, you're getting bad experiences from drivers on the road. Not all drivers, but some. Some drivers are lovely, you know, but not all. And then I think we were talking on the Cycling Plus forums, and suddenly someone found that Oregon Scientific camera. It was horrible. It recorded in like 240p. It ran on 2 AA batteries. And we saw this and we were like, oh, we've got to have that. Immediately we all saw the potential.
Yeah.
And that's probably because police and companies, if it was a liveried vehicle that you were reporting, wouldn't believe what happened. And they'd take the driver's side over yours. When you have video, then it completely changes what goes on. And like you say, it holds up a mirror. You're really showing what actually happened there. So that was back in about 2006. And then we started using cameras more and more. And I remember getting, I think it was a VIO POV camera. It's a really old one now. And then CycleGaz got his Contour Roam, and I was so jealous because it had such nice quality. And then it went to GoPros, and, you know, it's for me it's been GoPros, but there's lots of other good ones out there now.
Why do you do it? Why did you go from being a cyclist to cameras are now available to I'm going to dedicate some of my life to reporting people for crimes?
Yeah, I think somebody's got to step up, right? If we all do nothing, then it's just going to get worse. So somebody has to step up and do something, even though it's only a little bit what I'm doing, to try and make a small change. And it was really, most of my motivation is the not having to put up with bad driving and being able to do something about it. Some of it goes down to crossing the road with my kids when they were younger.
Yeah.
And with Ibrahim, the young lad who I work with special needs. So yeah, crossing the roads with him is super hard, and it's the risk assessment is also more formal simply because he's not my child, he's my boss's child, and it's hard, you know, he's slower, he gets distracted by things. So I feel extra worried about drivers not doing what they're supposed to when we're walking into the park, for example.
And that is, so that's not on a bike, that's actually just,
that's
like,
just walking,
just crossing roads. You felt there was a potential vulnerability, and therefore you felt like you had to do something about it.
That, and also we do cycle. So I have a Thorn Raven tandem in yellow.
Nice.
With a roll-off hub, and he rides on that with me. He loves it. And he's learning to ride on my yellow Brompton.
Lovely.
He actually considers it his own bike. It's like, Uncle Mike, put in garage.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
you seem to have a very thick skin. Have you always been this way?
No, definitely not. In the beginning, abuse really, I took it to heart, you know?
Yeah.
But you, when it's one or two instances of abuse, it seems so much more serious. But over the years, particularly after 2019, when I first started becoming more well known, it's increased to being like a 12-foot sewer pipe at high pressure. And what difference does it make what someone thinks of me who doesn't even know me?
Mm.
You know, what those few seconds of catching a phone driver or stopping someone doesn't really tell you anything about who I am or what my character is. So I can't take it personally, right?
Do you get scared, or are you just are you comfortable that you're always going to be all right, or do you approach it that it is a risk, but it's worth the risk?
So maybe there are some really wild people out there, a very small fraction, like maybe 0.01% of the population, who might do something more serious.
Yep.
I'm a little bit worried about them. But remember, I don't have to defeat them. I only have to survive whatever they do to me.
That's an incredible way of looking at it.
So I don't have to do anything to them, basically. I don't hate them.
Yep.
And everybody else is mostly going to have their behavior altered by all of us with cameras.
Mm.
You've chatted to us beforehand that there's actually a community of you that are out there recording and submitting reports. I'll be honest, I was probably quite naive. Obviously, I know people do report stuff, but I just kind of assumed that like you were out there on your own doing your thing. But actually, there's more than that.
Yeah, lots of people think I'm the only one, but it's not true. And I want to change that. I think I was saying how a friend of mine was recording some phone drivers and someone called him Mikey, which he was very amused. And this is this small group of about five of us who've been doing camera work since the early days, since about 2007-ish. But yes, I think there's tens of thousands of us. I don't think I'm even in the top 10 of people reporting in London.
Really?
And that's because I don't want to spend too much of my spare time doing this. I still have hobbies and family and a life, even though no one seems to want to give me that.
Do you happen to know what sort of hours a week you are spending on it?
About all I can really tell you is I'm wasting far too much of my life arguing with other idiots on Twitter, including myself as an idiot. It's too addictive, and I'm as addicted to my fondle slab as anyone else's.
So what is the craziest encounter you've had whilst doing this?
I think it's probably the man in the convertible. It was a silver convertible.
Yep.
Who started on a long rant about honor and integrity. I think you could probably Google it under honor and integrity. And his brothers were all in the army. One of them was in special forces.
Yeah.
And he was willing to lay down his life and live or die in the service of his country. And, you know, he was absolutely ranting at me. Quite a lot of commenters were speculating whether he was drunk or on Colombian marching powder. It was that deranged. And while he was leaning backwards, turned around backwards, shouting at me, he ended up driving on the pavement. And
oh my goodness.
It was completely nuts.
I was looking through your clips yesterday to try and find a little compilation that we can put together. And one of the things that I saw near the top of the popular list was the guy who threw water in your face as well.
Oh, yes. That was very minor.
It seems minor, but I mean, maybe I read too much news. I used to work in news, so I definitely get saturated with it. But like acid attacks and stuff like that, that would be going through my mind. In the split second after that happened, I would be terrified. But you immediately turn around, run after the, he starts running, you start chasing him, and then you start shouting, "You're a chicken." And
I'm making chicken noises.
I was trying to get him to stop so I could trace him to his vehicle. But I never had time to be afraid because it came as a surprise. And then once it was in my face, I immediately knew it was water.
Yes, yeah, fair enough.
So then I wasn't worried anymore. He was a large guy. Why was I chasing him? What an idiot.
I know.
Why is there a reaction in you to like, just you immediately just started running after him and you kept going for probably half a mile or something or other chasing him?
I was really gutted with my running. I used to be a very handy cross-country runner and I haven't done much running in years since because I smashed my ankle many years ago.
Yeah.
So I was gutted how badly I ran there. Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's like I have this thing of seizing the moment. If something important happens, carpe diem, right?
Mm.
YOLO. That's the modern version.
YOLO. Do you think that you have quite a strong sense of justice and right and wrong?
Maybe. I'm not too sure. Probably no more than any other Northern European with a somewhat puritanical side. I don't know. Well, I mean, my parents were quite strict bringing me up. I was what's known as a late lamb in Dutch. So I was the younger child. My brother's quite a lot older than me. But yeah, they're quite strict, definitely.
Interesting.
I guess that had an effect on me.
Yeah.
And Dutch people, you were mentioning the confrontation side of things, but I think I'm just being, this is how it is. And I know English people take that as being like really rude sometimes.
Dutch people, in my experience, are incredibly direct.
Yes.
Not rude. I don't find it rude as well. I really like to know where I stand with people, and I find communication with Dutch people really refreshing. But you're right. Some people take it as confrontational, too direct, maybe. I don't want to say angry, but I think that we sugarcoat things so much that directness, very just plain directness with no other agenda, can feel like it's has an agenda.
I feel like you've said all of the words that all of my previous bosses have said.
Oh, Jimmy is completely like that as well. Yeah, he doesn't sugarcoat anything. Yeah.
I like directness. I'm not very good at subtlety.
Yeah. Talking about crazy encounters, do you experience violence often?
Occasionally a little bit. I've had a number of more minor assaults that aren't involving touching. So they put you in fear of being hit.
Yes.
Those I'm usually not too worried about. I've had some minor pushing and shoving, and then one more serious assault, which I can't really talk about, unfortunately, because that's in court in about 2 weeks.
And what about online threats?
Yeah, loads of online threats. All kinds of things. People offering £1,000 for my home address.
Really? Wow. You know, does that worry you?
A little bit, not too much. I could always move.
Fair enough.
My boss is renting a place, you know, to keep me around for Ibrahim. So I could easily move. I mean, it's a schlep, right?
Yeah.
Having to move.
It is, yeah. And I guess that those kind of tactics of intimidation are designed to make you want to give up. But
You see a lot of that. People saying, oh, you're going to video the wrong person, which I regard as a threat by proxy. Yeah. Basically, they're so upset with what I'm doing, not with me so much, that they're trying to discourage me and everybody else from doing this because, you know, they see the power of third-party reporting.
Mm. Yeah. Do you take any safety precautions when you're out, apart from the fact that you're filming them or people?
Not very much, no. The most I've gone to is I now have an anti-theft lanyard on my head camera. So if someone grabs that, they're going to be pulling hard on my belt.
Because I guess that's probably quite a common one for the more confrontational people, is to try and grab your camera, smash your camera, whatever, that kind of thing.
I do know of 3 people who've had either a camera stolen or attempted to be stolen.
Yeah.
If that happens, if the camera's gone, then you have nothing. I do, in more dangerous circumstances, I generally run a streaming backup camera. So that streams onto a home server.
Oh, really?
Just because then, you know, it doesn't matter if they take the camera, there's nothing they can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What? How many cameras do you typically have on you?
So mostly I will just ride with 2. So a rear-facing camera and a head camera.
Right.
The head camera is a pain because you've got to keep putting it on and it looks stupid. But I'd much rather have something like a Cycle IQ one where the light's on your bike and you have so much less to do.
Mm.
Yeah. And I guess the benefit of being on your head is wherever you are, you're filming.
It sees more. And particularly phone offences, you need that head camera to get the phone offences.
Yeah.
Or like Jeremy Vine, have a single 360 camera.
Oh, of course, yeah.
I had his camera for a while, his old one. He gave it to me, but I've passed it on to a chap called Stephen Anderson, who doesn't cycle. He's partially sighted, and he gets all these Uber refusals, which is horrifying because he has a guide dog with him, right?
Oh, right, of course, right. Yeah.
So,
that's
films them.
A criminal offence, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an offence, and he's probably one of the main activists there who are reporting these drivers to TfL and getting them prosecuted.
Yeah.
Good for him.
I want to support his work. I think that's really good. It's awful that service dogs are being refused.
Absolutely.
So you are referred to as the most hated cyclist in Britain. You've been dubbed that by the tabloids. Does that bother you?
No, because again, they don't know me. If my friends hated me, then I'd have a problem. But, you know, they mostly don't hate me, except if I'm being a bit of an ass to them.
How do you feel about all of the press attention that you get?
Yeah, I would really like to have remained anonymous and for no one to know who I was. But unfortunately, with the Guy Ritchie case, the Evening Standard got the details. So yeah, fame is horrible. I don't want it.
Really?
But all I can do now that it's happened to me, I have no choice about it.
Just lean into it.
Lean into it. Use it as much as I can to try and get other people reporting, to make drivers aware that anyone could report them at any time. Yeah. Turn up next to them in the queue.
And it was interesting, we were talking before this and you were saying that drivers are more likely to report drivers than cyclists are currently.
Yeah, somebody did a Freedom of Information search on West Yorkshire Police, and about 2/3 of reports came from drivers and 1/3 from cyclists and pedestrians. So it's actually drivers who are most likely to report someone else. And I believe it's a similar proportion in London.
Right.
But also what was evident from that is the cyclist reports are 16 times more likely to get acted on by the police.
Right.
Which says that maybe cyclists are better at reporting things that are actual traffic offences.
Mm. Yeah. Or that their camera, because potentially of the placement of it, is capturing more.
Maybe,
more stuff. Yeah.
I don't know the reason, but my feeling is there's been so many articles on stuff like cyclists being more law-abiding as groups.
Yep.
Cyclists having better road safety knowledge. Cyclists being more likely to be drivers than the general population. Mm-hmm. Adults, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of it.
Mm. I think that's a really interesting thing, because one of the criticisms that's levied at you from people within the cycling community is that what you're doing is potentially creating more tension between cyclists and drivers, or somehow you're painting cyclists in a negative light and that affects how we go about our day.
I tell you why. I really love you guys because you're so positive about cycling.
Yeah.
And I do dislike the fact that my stuff is negative about road danger.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, to change behavior, you also need consequences. And I don't think, basically, we had all this bad driving and bad attitude before there were any cameras being carried around. So I don't think it's become any worse.
100%.
I think a very tiny fraction of drivers might be worse towards cyclists, but that would be like in the 0.01%.
Yeah.
I think almost all drivers will behave slightly better under a camera.
Well, this is it.
I haven't done a study, so it's anecdotal, right?
But if you think about it, you know, as you say, this was happening long before cameras existed. And the most problematic thing was that as a cyclist, you are a vulnerable road user. You have nothing against the might of a however many ton vehicle. But the one thing that we have now in our armor potentially is a camera. And, you know, it's not a weapon. It's not a confrontation. It's nothing. But if a driver is coming past and may have the knowledge that you have
exactly
some sort of way of it's a form of protection in the sense that it's a prevention measure, isn't it? That can only be a positive thing. Yeah.
It almost always tempers behavior to slightly better.
Yeah.
Not a great deal better, but slightly better.
Perhaps, yeah. Just through self-preservation on their part, they don't want to get caught and you could potentially report them.
You can really see them when there is a confrontation, particularly some of the more aggressive ones, you can really see how the driver's he's emotionally regulating himself and holding back from where he would want to go and where he would go without the camera.
Yeah.
So I think I disagree strongly with those few cyclists who say it's making things worse.
I think probably the bit that most people are missing, I don't want to speak on your behalf. It's definitely from my perspective. I would rather never have to report any or no one ever get a fine or points or prosecution or whatever. If in exchange for that, I can just ride my bike and not have to worry about a car possibly
exactly
killing
me. We don't want punishment, right?
Exactly.
Punishment is, but unfortunately, it's often the only way to change. I wrote out a list some time ago. I have all these copy and paste things on answering all these standard stuff for Twitter. And essentially, if I tell someone, please put your phone down, there's two possible reactions, which is a rude form of get lost, and or yes, and they put it down, but they'll pick it up 5 minutes or an hour later, or they'll carry on using it the next day.
Yeah.
If a policeman does the same thing, just words of advice, I think that period of not using the phone will be slightly longer, but they'll still go back to using the phone quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the break-even point comes at prosecution, where that's so much more serious now that it will force people, and not all people again, but it'll force many people to think about not using the phone, and probably for a period of a few years while the points are on their license. And then it goes further, of course. Some people don't care that they were prosecuted and carry on using their phone. And I have called several people multiple times.
As in the same people?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
The one got the most serious one got a 1 year disqualification. I was doing laps of Regent's Park during the very first week of lockdown, and he came past. And then I called him a year later again on his phone in a different car, and that's that time he got a 2 year disqualification. So it's a total of 3 years, which is astounding.
Mm.
And then another camera cyclist messaged me, say, "Hey, I caught that second car, but by then it passed on to another owner." So right. With somebody else. It must be maybe the car was jinxed.
And presumably you come into contact with the police regularly. What do they think about what you're doing?
Well, it's hard to tell because the police don't really want to tell you anything in case it's used against them. I mean, they have this kind of guarded approach to all of the public, I think.
Yeah.
Over the years, it's slowly opened up, and more I start to feel like the traffic processing services teams at Marlow House, which is the place in Sidcup where they do all these reports and they action them, they feel more and more like colleagues, you know?
I imagine. I bet they're all right, Mikey. They're used to seeing you all the time.
So I get on more, some are more open than others.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I appreciate that they really, almost all of them really do believe in road safety and they think it's a good thing to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very happy to be processing all these offences.
That's really refreshing to hear because, you know, I've held off even recording stuff for so long because I've just always just assumed that nothing ever happens. So I'm definitely going to get into a better habit of recording the definite ones. I'm not going to bother sending off reports if it's like open to interpretation.
Yeah, I do the same. You know, you have to filter what you send.
Yeah.
Based on whether there's enough evidence and whether it's likely to be prosecutable. See, I don't want to waste my time either.
Yeah.
I could be doing one of my hobbies.
Exactly. So yeah, it's definitely nice to hear that there are officers out there that legitimately do care about road safety because it always just seems like there's an afterthought, lots. Doesn't it?
I'm friends with a few traffic officers as well, just by the nature of what I'm doing on Twitter. And most of them really care.
Mm.
You can see it from the way they talk to you and what they tell you. The other thing I wanted to say is the more of us that do a little bit of reporting, that's far better than just having a few people doing a lot of reporting.
Yeah.
So I'd encourage you guys to go and report for yourselves.
Jimmy started doing it.
Yeah. Even if it's one a month, the worst pass or the worst phone user you see in a month or the worst red light jump, that has an effect.
It's interesting because a lot of your reports are phone users and red lights.
Some red lights, mostly phone users. And I guess phone users, that's an easy one to catch. It's also a very disabling one. People complain that I catch them stationary, but there's some quite good science to say that actually stationary phone use on its own is dangerous. And from what we all see, the people using the phone in the queue often drive for a little while still using it.
Mm. Yeah.
And then it's a bit like doing balloons. I only know this because I took some nitrous when my ex-wife was giving birth. So I know what that feels like. Had to try it out, right? But yeah, if you do balloons, and I've seen a few people doing balloons in London, you can put down the balloon and it's like putting down your phone. But that intoxication lasts for 30 seconds, a couple of minutes.
Mm.
And the science tells us it's the same with your phone. If you've got your mind invested in a WhatsApp conversation, it takes a little while for your consciousness. And consciousness is a fragile state of being, right? It takes a while to come back to where you need it for driving your car.
Yeah.
Totally.
So at what point do you stop doing this? So what changes would have to happen for you to no longer have to be Cycling Mikey?
Move to the Netherlands?
I am very jealous of the cycling culture out there. Jealous of
when
it.
When I visit my family, it's really great riding around there. I mean, the drivers are still bad. I have a few friends who have velomobiles. Mm. And you get just the same sort of horrendous overtakes into oncoming traffic. And I saw one just yesterday or the day before where the Dutch driver was smoking blue tires into head-on as he was trying to overtake three velomobiles in a line. Of course, he was way over the speed limit. Velomobiles are really fast and they were like just over the speed limit themselves.
Right.
It's the same stuff.
Mm.
Just you don't have to deal with it as much.
Because of infrastructure?
I think it's probably three things. Infrastructure. Then the culture. So nearly everybody cycles.
Yep.
So people are less arsy towards cyclists. Mm. Whereas here we're hated by so many. And lastly, presumed liability. So if you hit a cyclist, your insurance will automatically take the whack unless you can prove it completely was the cyclist's fault.
Oh, because there's a few other places in Europe that are like that as well, aren't there? I think, was it France?
Yeah, there's quite a few countries, and there's like four or five that don't do it, including the UK.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, some people are dead against the camera thing, but it works in the same way as that presumed liability, in that the deterrent is knowing you're potentially going to get caught for something. It's not that I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to save a life if I drive slower. You know, that's quite a hard concept for some. It just doesn't
ring
in people's
right?
minds. Yeah. Whereas the selfishness of people, all of us,
yeah.
thinks, I am going to get caught if I do this. The burden of proof, you know, the burden is on me to do this. Otherwise, I will have to be accountable for my actions and something exactly. will go against me. Is a lot more hard hitting. It just seems like an easier message that gets through to people.
And one of the other things that comes along with that is risk compensation. So as a cyclist or a pedestrian, we've got skin in the game. So
yes.
you're more careful about the risks you take.
Yes, absolutely.
Whereas a driver, you have got skin in the game, but you've got to do things a lot worse before, you know, with modern safety, before you're going to get injured yourself.
Yeah. yeah.
And it's the classic study is around ABS brakes. And when they came out, the only thing that we did differently was to, as human beings, was to drive a little bit faster and brake a little bit later.
Mm.
So almost all the benefit of ABS brakes was lost.
Mm.
And that's just because we're human beings and we adapt and change to what's going on around us.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons as well that I don't do another big criticism, which is, why don't I police cyclists? Well, A, I have no power over anyone. I don't want any power over anyone, right? And B, basically, if you were to make all cyclists perfect with a wave of the wand, what would happen to road killed and seriously injured stats? Not very much. You probably wouldn't measure it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a tiny bit, but like it would be the tiniest little line at the top of this big graph.
Yeah.
And if you change that and made drivers perfect, then I think you'd eliminate almost all deaths and serious injuries. So why would I spend my limited spare time on cyclists?
Yeah.
The most I might do is call out red lights or bray like a donkey at a red light jumper. I like my animal noises, as you've seen.
that is an exceptional point. If you asked me the question I asked you, which was, what would I like to not have to care about this? It would be that all people drive, all vehicles on the road abided by the law and therefore made it safe for me to do whatever I wanted to do on the road.
You can see to some degree cyclists in the Netherlands take advantage of this because, you know, some of the younger, particularly younger males, ride like loons.
Mm.
And drivers just have to like submit and hold back a lot of the time.
Interesting. So it's almost having that the power or the law on your side potentially changes what your habits are.
It's also very interesting seeing Dutch pedestrians versus English ones. If you ring your bell, English pedestrians either will not move angrily or jump out the way. Whereas Dutch pedestrians aren't ever surprised by a bike coming past them. They just carry on completely normally.
Yeah.
It's all predictable. You don't have people jumping sideways and almost into you sometimes.
Well, thank you for answering all those questions. We have also asked for some questions for Mikey on our Instagram. It is Cade Media Official if you want to give us a follow. First, we have a couple from Ben. Do you think that the people that you catch that get prosecuted actually change their ways or attitudes?
Yeah. So, Ben, I think some of them change. How many, I'm not sure, because I do see repeat customers and most of them are not using their phones when I see them again. But equally, I've caught a few people more than once. So the answer is they didn't change, certainly not on first prosecution. I wonder what happened afterwards on second prosecution. I caught one guy three times. He doesn't particularly count because the first two were on the phone at Gandalf Corner one day and the following day.
Oh, right.
And the third one was a few months later in a different location and I didn't have enough evidence.
Right.
I did scold him though. I mean, like, I caught you twice already. Why are you still on your phone? Are you mad?
So Ben also asks, what do you think could help change people's mentalities when it comes to the friction between drivers and cyclists?
Yeah, I think that friction is mostly artificial. I think it's partly media generated and it's partly because relatively few people cycle in the UK. So I think the thing that would change that most is lots more Dutch quality infrastructure. And I know I'm always abused for not being in the cycle lane, but particularly the one in Hyde Park. But Actually, I use it 99% of the time. You only see me out of it when I'm catching a driver, which is the only stuff that gets put on YouTube.
Ben also adds on general road safety. I think something that could help is if people treated driving like donating to charity to save a life. But instead of money, they donate some time by driving slower, not close passing, leaving more time for journeys so they're not in a rush. The roads could be far better for everyone.
That's a really good point, isn't it? Mm. Leave early and don't be late. Then you won't feel stressed and you won't feel like you had to rush. I didn't know that lesson when I was a young teenage driver.
Yeah, totally.
When I was on my speed awareness course, they said the number one reason, they don't ask for your reasons, you don't have to give them, but from anecdotal evidence, the number one reason people give for speeding is being late, being in a rush.
But I think a lot of the time being in a rush is artificial, isn't it? It's wanting to be somewhere sooner rather than later and not in a car rather than it actually being in a rush. You know, like you finish work, you want to be at home as quick as possible.
Well, I think it's also the opposite, that you haven't left in time for work, or maybe you have left in time, but there's more traffic. So it's thinking, well, there's going to be traffic, so I need to leave earlier, or just accepting that you might be late.
So Hannah says, would love to know what, if anything, you think has improved about cycling, roads and driving behavior since you started campaigning and making videos.
So I think the biggest effect, Hannah, comes from just having more cyclists in London. The little bit of infrastructure that the various mayors have put in, just having more cyclists, I think, is the biggest change. I think cameras are also having an effect. How much is hard to measure, but I know the Met Police were doing a study on that. I don't know the results yet in terms of the effectiveness of reporting. And what I will say from my own experience is when you have one of those impatient drivers behind you at the lights, and you can hear they're impatient because they're revving, right? if they happen to see the camera and when I turn sideways, suddenly all the revving's gone. Everything's gone quiet.
Mm.
And I've noticed that enough times that I'm convinced it's because of the camera.
We actually, someone sent us, I can't remember who it was. There's one on the wall back there. It's like a little speed camera sign thing with a magnetic flap that you put on your back pocket of your cycling jersey. And as I'm now started recording things and commuting into town more, I've actually been like, actually, I'm gonna nab that from the office and start using it and see if that makes a difference. Because like I said earlier, I don't want to report anyone. I just want to be able to ride to work safely. And like the thing, something that I've kind of considered today as well is it feels like you have to ride fast for it to feel safer as well. I want to be able to just pootle into town. I want to be able to pootle into work and not like nice and relaxed, nice and calm, ideally just in normal clothes because I know I'm not going to get really sweaty. But it feels like I can't because I have to do my best to maintain speed with cars.
I know exactly that pressure you mean. I feel it too. So when you're on nice infrastructure like embankments in London and that one in Hyde Park,
you take the pace off because you can.
You can just relax. Yeah. It's so nice. I also have a Pass Pixi. I hope I can say the name.
Is that what it is?
Pass PIXI.
Yes.
There's a chap on Twitter who does them.
Yeah.
I bought one and then he sent me some as well. So yeah, I was very grateful for that.
What it is. Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't remember the name of it.
I think they make a difference with the more observant drivers who might still take a chance.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with the very worst drivers, their driving is so bad and their observation is equally bad.
They wouldn't even notice it.
And then they wouldn't even notice it.
Yeah. Next one. William says, I don't have a question, but please pass on my admiration and respect for Mikey. I'm a big fan. The fact that he's so despised, in particular by taxi and van drivers, yet continues doing what he's doing and putting himself in danger is extremely brave and respectful. I wish him much luck and success going forward.
Oh, thank you very much, William. That's really kind of you. I'm just an ordinary bloke, nothing special. I've just found a lever that I can pull that has an effect.
Daniel says, I have a rear camera and have submitted several close passes. However, the most severe outcome has been a warning letter, even when the close pass was so very obvious, fast and dangerous. I have on multiple occasions challenged why this is, and the police say there is insufficient evidence to secure a conviction. What more evidence do they need than a 1080p video, my written statement, and my willingness to go to court? In your experience, how can I improve the chance of meaningful action being taken? Do I need a front camera and any tips for the write-up? That's a great question.
Yeah, it's really good, Daniel. My understanding is that different police forces don't have their own standards on how they prosecute close passes. So some are not very good at it. also close passes, I believe, are much harder to prosecute because, like, what is the danger? Where does the danger come in? At what distance from you? Whereas a mobile phone use, once you've shown that it's held in the hand and being used and the person's driving, that's game over. It's an absolute offence. I think the most helpful tip I saw was from an inspector with Sheffield Police. He showed how you could put your bike next to a parked car and put a tape measure and then calibrate the field of view of your camera. And then you can show, based on that field of view, if it's a fixed camera on the bike, which I assume it is being a rear camera, then you can show much more accurately how close the pass was to you, and that would help. Apart from that, other things that show it's a close pass is if it's scary enough to cause you to exclaim or swear, if it's scary enough to make you swerve out of the way. Those things I know are taken into account in evidence, but I don't have any hard solutions, I'm sorry.
However, I would also argue that a warning letter lets people know that someone's watching. It is kind of a first step, and while it might not work for everyone, it might be enough just for someone who isn't a regular speeder or isn't a regular close passer, perhaps just doesn't have that education. It might be a step in the right direction for them, although it doesn't seem...
It's definitely better than nothing, isn't
it? I agree,
I think it's. I actually think it's a very good step.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's as good as prosecution, but I think it has some effect, simply because when I was on that commute between Biggin Hill and Bromley, those road safe letters had an effect on close passes, quite a strong effect.
Stephen asks, what do you think is the bigger problem in cycling? The bad drivers whose actions make cycling unsafe, or bad cycling infrastructure that isn't creating a safe environment for us? I feel like that's probably quite a British cycling infrastructure question, because as I'm sure anyone which rides a bike in Britain will know, that nearly all cycle paths are just completely inappropriate. Like, for example, there's a load being put into Gateshead at the minute that are basically pedestrian paths where they're now saying you can ride a bike on it as well, which makes me very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's a really good point, Stephen. I think both are a problem. I'd say probably the bad driving behavior is worse, just because it puts so many of us in fear. But yeah, I also think that there's so much bad infrastructure that there should be some kind of national standards council which review these bad cycle paths and do something about them. Force the councils to take them out, maybe. Anything that's not to some reasonable degree of Dutch quality should not be implemented. There was a good study from, I think it was Professor Rachel Aldred from Imperial College, and she showed that a painted cycle lane was worse and more dangerous than having no cycle lane on a road at all.
It's absolutely wild.
I'm not too surprised with some of them. There are a few that are wider, I suspect, are not as clear cut. Like on Bayswater Road, there's a really quite a wide painted cycle lane.
Yeah.
That feels better. But when you have one of the sort of murder strips that are really narrow and an afterthought on a road, I don't know. You know, I'm not the professor that she is.
Is an example of that the footage I showed you earlier of me being squeezed into a tiny little strip by a 40-ton articulated lorry earlier on my commute?
I'd call that cycle lane a murder strip.
For the last one, we got a couple of questions, which I'm going to sum up into one question, which was basically that... one criticism of the work you do is that it's good, but that in some way you go about it the wrong way, in quotes, because in some way you're seen as too confrontational, whereas it could be a place to educate, or I don't know, somehow you're responsible for diffusing tension between the driving and the cycling community. How would you respond to that?
So I think I'm just Dutch and direct and factual. I don't think I'm being particularly confrontational. And I think that really sounds to me like tone policing. And tone policing to me is when someone's lost the argument, you're not doing it in the right way. And then lastly, I would point out that very few drivers are capable of remaining unemotional and detached and saying sorry when they're caught doing something wrong. There's something about driving that's... having your own driving criticized is apparently psychologically worse than being told you're bad in bed with evidence. No, seriously, there was a study on this.
Was there?
It's that impactful on our psyche.
Interesting.
And all of us. I don't put any of us as being less vulnerable to that.
Can I ask you a question about Gandalf Corner? obviously you've got lots of examples of people arguing with you, pushing you with their car, jumping out of their car, trying to fight you because you're basically saying go back. How many people do actually just go back and just go, actually, yeah, you do know what? You are right. I've done something wrong. I'm just going to go back and wait my turn.
The majority go back.
Right.
Quite a few and go back without very much argument. Some will try and drive past you and give up when they see you're not getting out the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Some will then try and drive into you. The most aggressive and egotistical of them.
It's refreshing at least that most are actually going, yeah, okay, you've caught me out here. I'm okay with that. I'm just going to reverse my car back and get myself back in the queue of traffic like I'm meant to be.
I've started pushing my bike out with me now.
Mm.
Just so that if I get any more trying to run me over, that I'll just abandon the bike and let them run over the bike.
Yeah. It's interesting though, and you're right, you have to put into perspective the fact that what you get served on YouTube is the most inflammatory stuff, the most sensational stuff. And that's probably what most people know about you, whether it's something on YouTube or clips on TikTok or Instagram or what it is. It is the most inflammatory thing. And that probably doesn't do any good for sort of drivers versus cyclists relations, but I don't think that's necessarily your fault. That is probably the algorithm's fault, in that it feeds into that kind of us versus them mentality, because actually most of your videos probably show you go back and they go back and then it's fine. So
same with the phone drivers, right? Lots of people just put it away and wave a sorry.
Exactly, yeah.
So some people ask why I don't film them and go away without ever being seen.
Mm-hmm.
So my view is I'd rather stop them immediately and make sure they know to put the phone down and that they know consequences are coming.
Yeah.
So that they don't use the phone in the rest of the journey. Secondly, because people don't think they're doing anything wrong in the queue, I want to start that first little crack in their holotech skulls or minds. And so that they'll probably dismiss me, but that might then make them go and look at the highway code, and then they'll be like, oh, okay, yes, maybe I was doing something wrong. And then the police letter will hit. So it's really just to maximize the teaching opportunity.
And to be honest, I think people are probably underestimating that there is education there. Is because some people will go, well, I'm allowed to do it. And you go, well, actually, you're not. And then they go, oh, maybe I should check that out.
It's like teenage school, but worse, because I'm teaching people who really, really don't want to learn from me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've been a teacher all my life, like with the skating, with Ibrahim. Yeah. I'm teaching him all kinds of stuff. Like I teach him to do his laces and all that kind of stuff.
That's the end of the questions. Thank you very much, Mikey. I think we learned a lot there, didn't we, Jimmy?
Yes.
No, I think the most interesting thing about you, Mikey, is that I was going to say you are a person, but that sounds really simplified.
Yes.
But I think it's really easy to just see the headlines and the...
I'm just another human being, right?
Yes.
I spent a lot of time thinking about all of this stuff.
I think my biggest takeaway from meeting you and having these conversations is I will definitely make the effort to submit the close passes that are definite close passes going forward. Because I want to educate people and make the road safer for everyone.
Yeah. Are we going to become targets now? Is this going to hit some weird part of the algorithm where it's
not
drivers rather than cyclists?
I hope I don't bring my trolls to you guys.
Well, even the last video had a handful of comments where people were saying that I was cyclists saying that I was disgusting for reporting a car going 72 and a 30. Yeah,
perhaps. So we'll see how this one goes down. Also, I feel like I should address the elephant in the room, which is... Jimmy's not in his usual place. We'll probably get that comment. And the reason for that is it was a bit of a fluff up of the week in that...
Fluff up of the week?
Yeah, I guess so. Okay, fluff up of the week. We don't tell anyone what to wear when they turn up here. And Mikey sat down with his lovely red top on the lovely red background.
I'll own the fluff up. It's my fault.
Well, I didn't know. We've all learned a lesson here. And yeah, you sat down in that place there and basically faded into the background. So we made an executive decision to switch. And also I realise this is going to make no sense if you're listening and not watching. But they've switched places and people care about that, apparently. We had some funny road signs and things like that to read out. But I'm going to save it to next week because we have talked for a long time.
Excellent.
Yes.
Okay, so before we go, I need to tell you about next week's guest. He's the team nutritionist for EF Education Easy Post Pro Cycling Team and our good pal, Will Gerling. He's a highly qualified nutritionist, a former strongman, cycling coach and ultra cyclist, and he's going to be here to answer your questions. So please send them to wildonespodcast@cademedia.co.uk. That's all for this week. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Mikey for joining us. Please like and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. Please follow and give us a good review if you are listening.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.